Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com. Hey, this is Hannah Forden. I'm the program manager here at Heritage Radio Network. This year, we're celebrating HRN's 10th anniversary, and I want to thank all of our listeners and members for being a part of an incredible year of food radio. We never would have made it this far without all of you. So HRN is now in its summer fun drive, and this is when we turn to you and ask that you make a donation to help ensure a bright future for food radio. Whether you listen to one show or 20, there's a reason why you keep tuning in week after week. All of our content is powered by a small nonprofit, and we rely on your generosity to keep going. Help us keep broadcasting the most thought-provoking, entertaining, and educational conversations happening in the world of food and beverage. So become a member today. To celebrate our 10th anniversary, we have some brand new member gifts available online, so I encourage you to snag your new favorite pizza-themed t-shirt or enamel pin today and show the world how much you love HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate so you can snag your 10th anniversary member swag. And thank you.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 150 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And today, I bet every single one of them is listening to Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today, I'm going to say what I always say. I have amazing guests. I always do. It's true. They are the founders of Tillit NYC, which is a culinary restaurant haberdashery, working clothes for working people in the restaurant world. And they've taken all this connection and experience from their clientele and put it into a brand new show on Heritage Radio Network called Opening Soon. They're actually earlier in the day on Tuesdays. They broadcast live at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And their show is about opening a restaurant and the journey that you take and the things that you should do. And they have a lot of great guests ranging from chefs to restaurateurs to vendors, everything from branding to build out to business plan. And there's so much about opening a restaurant and running a successful restaurant today that is technology that didn't exist 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and perhaps not when Alex and Jenny were at Commander's Palace in New Orleans.
Years ago.
Definitely not.
I think Commander's Palace is probably still cocktail napkin pencil level technology.
Probably. I mean, right? We haven't been there in about 15 years.
I feel like of the stalwarts, they probably do keep up with the times a little bit. And I
really want to think of them as having the big red faux leather reservation book with like a rubber band and a pencil.
That they probably have, but they've actually like, done really it really well.
I've been desperately looking for a restaurant that doesn't have any digital online reservation system, but still has just,
I mean, even
the book.
Yeah, even older than
there
that,
has like, to be somebody somewhere.
Commanders had like these maitre d's who had been there for like
less about
decades,
the book. Yeah.
And it was less about like writing it down because they just knew everybody in their heads, and they were like, oh, it's Sunday night. Stan Smith is going to come in with his family.
We've talked about this many times.
Yeah,
it's like unfortunately, I feel that position has kind of gone away a little bit.
And maitre d'.
Mm-hmm. The maitre d', the first person that welcomes you into the restaurant is someone that like literally knows everybody that's been there for the last 30 years.
Yeah, well, Commanders did that so well.
They are the tech.
A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about how maitre d's are being replaced by robots. not really, but sort of. Maybe. But before we get to opening soon and what you need and don't need for restaurant tech. And we are going to talk a little bit about robots taking over certain jobs. We're going to start the show like we always do, going around the shipping container, talking about apps, new ones, maybe old favorites that have been living on the home screen of your smartphone for over a decade now.
Ugh, so
can you imagine?
No, I can't believe the iPhone's a decade old. That's crazy.
Yes. So, Jenny, do you have an app that you like right now?
I mean, so since we've launched Opening Soon, I find myself just listening to podcasts all the time with just trying to get fresh ideas. So I would say,
how do other people do it?
Yeah, like how are other people doing it? What are my colleagues here at Heritage, like you, doing? What are new things that I can discover? So I'm definitely addicted to my Apple podcast app right now.
Okay.
That's my number one.
Excellent. We do have 35 live shows on Heritage Radio Network with Matt, our engineer, who's back in the booth, who is sitting strategically in that small slice of space between the two windows. So
we
I can't
see
him.
Call it
My spot.
Yourspot.com.
Yes.
How many episodes do we have in the archives online?
I think it's like 3 billion.
I was going to say 15,000, but yeah, your number might be better.
Like 12, I think it's like 12,000.
Because it's more than 10, because it was 10
more
when
than
I started.
10, I believe, but it's not
more than 10,000, less than 3 billion.
There's so many good
somewhere in there.
That's a healthy range.
I listened to your predictions with David
Heilbronn-Levy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that was the
was frightening.
Last show.
I was depressed. Like, I think there's some silver linings, but yeah, I definitely listened to that one yesterday.
She's talking about the last show of 2018. Yeah. The last show of the year, we have predictions for the coming year, and he's a founding partner of a law firm in downtown New York that specializes in hospitality. Mm. And his predictions for the year are very dire. And it has to do with losing your favorite neighborhood restaurant because they can't live economically anymore.
Yeah.
Do you feel like they've come true? Are these supposed to happen in 2019?
I mean, it's supposed to be for this year, and I felt like he was probably right about the trend, but wrong about the actual
timeline.
Well, he was saying that he was seeing people come to him and ask to dissolve partnerships, which, you know,
means something's happening.
Which means something's happening
well,
this year.
I would say where I live in Manhattan and Chelsea, there are everyday new empty restaurants. And they are not being reopened. And there are spaces that have been empty for years. And they just keep closing and restaurants don't keep opening.
I mean, we see that in the Lower East Side. It's like Mission Cantina has been literally closed for almost 3 years now. It's been 2.5 years at least.
The original space?
Yeah, and that's on like a huge... That's on like.
I think somebody's actually taken it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's somebody that came in the shop recently.
Oh, well, there you go. The silver lining.
A small mom and pop operation has decided to take over the space.
But
it's going
to
be a Starbucks.
Rejuvenate it.
It's a Starbucks.
No, Dad, no.
You have to
please,
believe.
No.
Alex, what's your favorite app right now?
I don't know if I call it my favorite, but it's definitely something that
most
we've been using a lot
you push
lately.
Push the button a lot.
Is Planoly.
Okay.
So Planoly is
sounds
an app
like something
that does,
that's very efficient for an entrepreneur.
It is.
It's an Instagram posting scheduling app. So you can use it both on your desktop and on your phone. But what it allows you to do is obviously to schedule posts for, you know, anywhere.
Your podcast.
You could probably go as far as you want. Yeah. So when you're a business and you have multiple accounts, so we have Attila NYC. I have my own personal, which I don't schedule posts for, but and then
it's
our
mostly
podcast.
Of our daughter Mally,
right? The post of your daughter at the laundromat was not scheduled.
that was not
pre-recorded and planned for like
you can
release
see the quality of the photos as they go down. but being able to see those, kind of schedule it out, because we have there's certain times too that our audience is watching. Online.
It has an algorithm that will just post it at the right time for you based on your audience base?
It doesn't do that, but it'll post it when we've, you know, kind of seen historically have been good times. So like we see for, you know, the restaurant industry that, you know, chances are good that between 9 and 11 when they're, you know, waiting for those last tables to come in is when they might have a chance to look at their phone. Anywhere from 4 o'clock to 9 o'clock, you know, that unless you're off that day, you're probably not looking at your phone. And if you are, you might be out of a job soon. So, but that Planoly is really great in that aspect.
So you prefer Planoly to the other social media scheduling apps and services like Hootsuite is one I always use.
We use Hootsuite, and I think it's great. I think that the ease of use of Planoly is really good.
Okay.
And so I like the interface.
Lays it out like your feed.
Hootsuite has the algorithm where it will auto post for you at the best time based on your audience.
Based on your audience, yeah. Mm-hmm. Planoly may do that. I'm not sure that it doesn't. Okay. But it's not something that we have used.
Okay, fair enough. I might look at it.
Yeah.
Is it free or is it
It's definitely, freemium, I believe, it's a little bit less expensive than Hootsuite is.
Hootsuite is free.
Hootsuite's a more premium. Hootsuite is...
I use the free version.
I guess it depends on the number of accounts, the number of users.
We have, because we have like a marketing assistant internally at Tillit, so we have to have multiple logins. Right. So we use like a...
Enterprise version.
Yeah, it's still affordable. Cheap though. It's like $15 a month, and I think we like the previous. We were using we used Hootsuite, we used Sprout, which well. I would recommend Planoly over those. So, and it was like definitely cheaper than Sprout when we switched, and it was better at sending like the notifications, and you can plan Instagram stories and all those kind of good things.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and you can always look at your business insights to see when your users are most active also pretty easily on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Very relevant to your show, to this show.
Yeah.
And to life.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be like opening a restaurant and remembering to post content and all those kind of things.
So. It's so hard to open a restaurant anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, just fundamentally, it's one of the most difficult things to do. Someone was talking to me not too long ago about how they were thinking about opening a neighborhood coffee shop restaurant type thing. And what did I think of that? And my reply was, I wouldn't counsel anybody to open any kind of restaurant in New York City right now.
I think anybody, too, that says, you know, simply that I'm thinking about doing this. It has to be like, I really want to do this. This is like the only thing I can do with my life is to do this. Then I would say 100%, let's go ahead and give you that encouragement. But it's just such a tough gig, tough life, tough way to have a family. Like it's a really hard thing. So, but it is super rewarding. But if that passion is there, then yes, by all means, you should 100% follow your dreams. But if it's an afterthought or like a, yeah, maybe I'll do this. It's like, we had a friend that came to us one time that, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was like, I'm thinking about like my neighborhood really needs it, you know, this kind of restaurant, and I've got the money to do it. And what do you think?
He's like a tech guy who has 5 kids and wanted to be able to take his kids somewhere to eat on the weekends with their baseball team and friends. So he was like, you know, just had no idea about what
anything
the grind
had
is.
No idea about anything.
Yeah. So he like asked Alex. So Alex.
We connected him with a restaurant consultant, and I think that they
basically we connected him with Hellbron and Levy.
I believe we did. Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
And so I think that they kind of gave him a little bit of a walk.
We can end
there.
The show now because we've come full circle.
We've definitely come full circle.
And scene.
Yeah.
One of the things that we have talked about on this show on different episodes, because we talk a lot to entrepreneurs and founders of food tech companies, when you're starting a food tech company, there are so many places to go for help when you're starting any kind of tech company or anything that qualifies as a startup. And for some reason, restaurants are outside that group. And I think restaurants are the original sort of startup.
Yeah.
You hustle some money, you get friends and family, you know, you do your own sort of like funding thing, and you just bootstrap it,
right,
and you get it together and you do it. But when you're doing a food tech company, there's a lot of help for you. There are a myriad of websites where you have examples of pitch decks you can download, you can copy. There are templates. There are pitch spotlights and accelerators and incubators and forums and all kinds of places to go to get help. And part of the startup culture is also having mentors and a board of director and people who check in with you, who help you. And that is part and parcel of being a food tech founder and starting a business. And restaurants just don't have that. They don't have the same reservoir of information. They don't have a standing public that is interested and willing to be an advisor for free or just jump on board. The culture of information sharing, information repositories, and mentorship just don't exist. So it's interesting that you've decided to sort of put some of these things into action in your show because there are so many details. And one of the things that we try and do on this show is every now and again, we do what I would call a boot camp episode where we try and kind of demystify some piece of restaurant or industry tech and walk people through it. What is it? What do you need to do? We did a show on like payment tokens and security systems. Hmm. How many people who are thinking about opening a restaurant who are listening know what a payment token is and know if it should be inside or outside your firewall?
I don't even know that. But there are like these details, and that's exactly why we wanted to do the show, is because Alex and I, you know, in 2010 opened and closed a restaurant within 6 months because we didn't have like appropriate resources and knowledge base. And there wasn't like the how-to books and the like websites with pages and pages of like, this is how you do this. This is what you do for starting a restaurant. So, and we've seen from working with 4,000 plus restaurants with Tillit, we've seen people do things very differently, you know, across the board, and not necessarily information share about like, oh, this was the most effective thing for me. This is like, you know, a great resource for this and that kind of thing. So we felt like there definitely was a void.
Yeah, and we've seen, I feel like we've seen a lot of people succeed, but we've also seen people fail in the same way that we did. And, you know, I think it's this this culture, like you said, that's lacking, but the one that's there is that it's, you know, it's all experience-based. So the only way you're going to learn to open a restaurant is by working in 15 different restaurants and, like, trying to get around and absorb as much as you can. The problem is that at, for chefs, for front of house, for service, you don't necessarily get access to all those things. Whether you're, you know, you might be lucky enough to be part of one restaurant opening and kind of see how it goes through. But for the most part, if you're a young cook, if you're not the chef or the GM, those two people, you don't get hired until the restaurant is open, until all of those things have gone through. And the chances of getting a sit down and really going through in depth of all those things that it takes to go through, from writing a business plan to finding partners to getting a liquor license, like, you just aren't going to have that knowledge. Unless you do it yourself, or unless, you know, resources like what we're trying to do continue and evolve, and people have a better method of sharing.
Yeah, sometimes people open a restaurant because they have a great pizza recipe, right, or they think their neighborhood is missing, you know, fried chicken after Little League spot without having any concept of what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Right.
So I'd be curious to have your point of view, and even the fact that you opened and closed a restaurant and failed, that's even very a la mode.
That's my Instagram.
That's
handle.
Alex's
don't try
Instagram.
And steal it.
Check that box.
I love it.
In the startup culture, because they have Fail Friday and don't be, you know, what are you afraid of? And all the stories of the entrepreneurs who their first business or their second business didn't get off the ground, and it was the third and the fourth. And it's almost a rite of passage.
Silicon Valley startup, is 100% a rite of passage.
In the startup
failing
world, it's not the same necessarily in the restaurant industry.
No, definitely not the same. And, you know, it sucks to have had a failed restaurant, but we definitely learned a lot from the experience, and we made our current business Tillit better for it. We definitely feel like we learned from that experience, and that's like some of the knowledge sharing. And it's true. It's like when I was in business school, one of the marketing professors would always say, you know what an entrepreneur is? Somebody who's actually started a business, whether or not it succeeds or not, is a different story. But it's like, just takes one to actually, you know, work. So
your restaurant moment was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So 9 years later, what's the difference in terms of what kind of technology? Your first show is about the business plan,
right,
and your guests talk about you had a non-industry partner come on board and look at the business plan, and they shared it. And there were line items that people weren't necessarily thinking about when they initially created it. And I would imagine that there are a lot of line items now in a business plan today in 2019 that are all tech that did not exist in 2010.
Yeah, and there's some, I think, that are, the line item is smaller. The line item can be subscription-based, which makes a big difference for a new restaurant opening, because it's, you know, super capital-intensive and super risk-heavy in the beginning for a restaurant.
And beginning means the first 2 years.
Yeah.
For people listening
far,
at
right?
home, the beginning means the first 2 years.
For sure. I mean, that's a big part of the business plan that we talk about, too, is having that cash reserve to go for way longer than you think. And that's a huge misconception for a lot of young people that are looking to do a restaurant, is that, you know, 2 months in, 3 months in, cash will be coming and we'll be able to, you know, afford all those things that it takes. And unfortunately, even if you are the most successful, that probably just isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think back to your question, some of the things that have changed quite a bit from when I was in the kitchen and when we did goods to now are the way websites were created. So like bringing people in from the very beginning. So companies like Get Bento that basically can create an entire welcome storefront for you online, which is how people are finding new restaurants.
I think we have like a splash page with like one picture and like a link to like a PDF.
We had to have a developer do it. Yeah, and I'm sure and it probably cost $5,000 or $10,000.
Because there was always that shady person who would come in and say, yeah, I can build you a website. It's going to cost $50,000.
Right.
And nobody knew what that involved. No, so offering. People would say, okay. And then you would talk to people.
Expensive.
Exactly. Like, and then I need a server. And what's that about?
Right.
Like not a waiter server, but electronic server. And and then you need somebody to be a search optimization person. So you're going to pay somebody so people can find your website. I mean, it was also, it's because people don't know what's involved. There's a lot of shady. There was a lot of shady with website building at the beginning.
I mean, Bento's done a good job of game-changing that, for sure.
We have a great episode, actually, with Crystal Mobiani, who's the CEO and founder. She's been on the show a couple times. I really like having women CEOs and founders on the show a lot. But we did episode 126, which was restaurant websites.
Oh, cool.
And we just sort of talk about the ins and outs and what you need. And because, again, they're restaurant-specific, they have the input requests troubleshooting from their customers, you know, similar to at Tillett. So they develop things based on what people are asking for sometimes, which may not be obvious to a programmer.
Right.
Necessarily.
Yeah. It's a game changer. I mean, it's the same as, you know, we wouldn't have been able to start Tillett without a back end like Shopify that just didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, 15, I don't know when Shopify started, but maybe 15 years ago.
We were pretty early on the platform when we started Tillett in 2012.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's just night and day about our business would not literally would not exist
without Shopify.
Because it's low risk for us. And when we went from doing a restaurant, which is absolute high risk from the beginning, because you just can't open a restaurant on $30,000. You have to have, you know, at least $250,000 to open the tiniest of shacks, which is what we had. But we started Tillett on $30,000, which is a completely different game plan.
Which you can do out of your apartment.
We did do it out of our apartment, literally out of our apartment for a year and a half. Thank you to our early employees who worked in our apartment. We still love you.
And that was also a reaction of the restaurant. It was, you know, we had just dumped all this money and had this really high risk thing. And we were like, no,
that was capital intensive.
You know, let's go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But I don't know where we were, but I lost my train of thought.
No, but what's changed? I mean, thinking back to goods, so I think also something that's really interesting is that for goods, we were cash only because the POSs.
Oh my God, could you imagine cash only?
I know. And now
who
it's
has
like,
cash?
Who has cash? Right. It, so that was in 2010.
Do you have cash on you right now?
I think I have $1.
Cash. Matt, do you have cash on you?
I actually do.
Okay.
No, I don't. Jen and I don't have cash.
I go to Dollar Slice enough. Although, actually, they take card.
Old men carry cash.
Okay. Did you just call my engineer old?
Calling myself old. Okay. And maybe I'm throwing Matt in the bucket. Sorry
about that. Cash only.
So
that's brazen.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
New York, I never had cash, though.
Ah.
Okay.
So New York did it to you.
Mm-hmm. But now that I think about anywhere, and we were like, you know, technically a quick service type of model where we had like, you would order from the truck and then go sit in the garden. And now when I think about quick service restaurants, a lot of them are cashless.
Correct.
So it's really,
which creates its own set of social issues.
It does create its own set of social issues. And there's a whole thing around, you know,
elitism.
Yeah.
Not democratic.
Yeah, it's true. Because some people don't have credit cards because they can't afford to
or
have credit
cards.
Or a phone
that has a facial identification scanner on it.
Yeah. So there is definitely that aspect. But it's just like the thought of being cash only now is few and far between.
Well, we at Heritage Radio Network are not cash only. As a matter of fact, we are online transactions all the way. We take all the credit cards. We're going to stop and take a quick break to listen to who the sponsor is of this show. Did you know that Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit? Did you know we're kind of like public radio? And we keep the lights on and the mics hot out of the generosity of listeners like you, who are our members, grants, and underwriters like this one. Stay with us. I know it, I know it, I know it.
This episode was brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with meeting and event spaces available for on-demand booking. Looking for the next perfect outdoor location for your next gathering? Host your next event at 100 Bogart's impressive rooftop, just steps away from the Morgan L Stop. It's one of the largest and tallest roof spaces in Bushwick, boasting 360-degree views of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. 100 Bogart's rooftop is available for your next networking event, fundraiser, special performance, or photo shoot. There's approximately 5,000 square feet, ample space for up to 100 guests. For more information on hosting an event at 100 Bogart's rooftop, email info@100bogart.com or call 718-362-3539.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on Heritage Radio Network, where we talk to innovators and influencers in the food tech space. Are you an innovator in the food tech space? Are you a CEO or a founder of a food company, a new food tech product, or maybe a restaurant tech software platform? Are you looking for funding? If you are, Tech Bites might be your answer. We are having another live pitch show on July 16th, and this time we have two lucky companies who will be able to live pitch Joshua Siegel, who is the managing partner of Rubicon Venture Capital. He is looking for one food product company that must be something that has a daily purchase, has a great price point with good distribution, and most importantly, should taste good. Also looking for a restaurant tech software platform company. It should be more than a feature. It should be fundamental to operations, sales, or acquisition. And most importantly, it should be scalable. Companies should be late seed doing a million or so in revenue. You can be located anywhere geographically, but the founders must be in the studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn, inside Roberta's Pizza for the live broadcast. So if you think that's you and you're looking for money and you think you could pitch it and win it, send us your deck, send it to techbites@heritageradionetwork.org, and maybe you'll come and live pitch for money on the show.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Oh, yeah, we did it last year,
that
too.
That sounds super fun. I want to listen to this one.
It's like mini Shark Tank.
Yeah, I love it. And it's somebody who's, who won last year?
We did two shows, so we had four companies on.
Oh, wow.
We had a different venture capitalist.
Did anybody
last
get
year.
An investment?
I don't know that they got investment, but they definitely got conversation and follow-up. So should go back to them and see if people got investment.
I'm going to send this to our friends at Faba Butter.
They've been on the show.
The Faba Butter guys?
Yeah. The Adrian? Faba Butter guys. Both of them. The Faba awesome. Butter guys were on the show.
I can vouch for the product.
Last year.
Good. It does taste good. I'm impressed. It's so cool. It's upcycled butter. Sorry, they were on the show.
They were on the show. on the You're going to love the second show. The first show they were on was I did one where it was millennial CEOs, under 25.
Wow. They're under 25?
They're like 23 and 22
you
or something
tell,
like that.
You can tell these guys have so much energy. They have so much energy. They're babies, like
you can't,
bouncing down
you
the street.
You can't see the baby face on the radio, but baby face.
Wow, I didn't realize they were that young.
Oh, super young. Mm-hmm. And or maybe 25 and 26 or something like that. Yeah. But they were all under 25-ish.
Whoa.
So what I did following that, they kept telling me how great their plant-based butter was. Mm-hmm. And if you go to their website, it said something like, Michelin-starred chefs think it's as good as French butter. I was like, I'll be the judge of
You're
that.
Like, I happen to know I'll be the Michelin-starred chef.
So what I did is actually I had them, the Faba butter, and then I also had a company on called Rise, which is upcycled barley flour from breweries.
Okay.
And they say their product is amazing also for baking. So I had both of those companies send samples to a pastry chef named Chris Broberg, who is classically trained. He's been a best pastry chef of the year. He was at L'Espanasse and a bunch of super high-end, four-star fancy restaurants. He's now the chef, a chef at Facebook Instagram, Instagram HQ.
Cool.
So I had everyone send him product, and he baked classic French baking with it
and
then came on the show and talked about it.
So cool.
Because he's super technical and very scientific about you know, melt points and protein.
Right. So and went all modernist cuisine
and
on
just
it.
Just got it. Deep into that and super geeky, but it was really fun. And yeah. he liked both of the products.
Did he use Good. Them together exclusively, or?
I don't think he used them together. I think he used them independently okay. so that he could baseline them.
Right.
He did a sablé with the fava butter, like a sablé cookie and something else. And
so cool.
Yeah, it was really great. It was really well done because all of these food product founders will tell you how great it is and they'll yeah. make all these claims.
Right.
But let's
put it to the test.
Absolutely.
I love
let's
that.
See if it's
I love
true.
That you
so
did
I got
that.
An impartial, super qualified third party
yeah.
focus group. We also did that with the Brooklyn aquaponic company that started producing fish in their indoor farming. And so I had the chef
in
of,
Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm. So I had the chef of Oceana get samples of the fish
and
come on the show.
How'd that
with
go?
The founder and
that's a lot
talk
of pressure.
If
that
it
is a lot of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure, but you know what? It's a great opportunity for the company. I'm like, you want to yeah. put your product in front of one of the top seafood chefs?
I assume
in
it,
the city?
They passed.
Yes, they did.
They
okay.
passed the test.
yeah, they
What's
did.
The name of the company?
I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna find the episode okay. and the name.
Cool.
And let you know. It's Edenworks.
Okay.
Edenworks. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if anybody's working on this, but from our side, there needs to be I heard you say something about a consolidated platform for the pitch contest, and there needs to be consolidated OS&E platform for restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
That's like one thing that's missing and not out there because people are sourcing things from all over the place and they don't have a consolidated place to like go and put orders and reorders and all those kind of things.
It's true.
What do they do now?
They go through distributors and they come to us individually and all these things. And then what happens is that, you know, like your starting general manager moves on and then they don't know who the contact is for whatever vendor. And it's like, it's all very manual. Like if you're in like a traditional retail brand and you're selling wholesale, say to like a Bloomingdale's, they have platforms. There's one like called New Order where you can go and you put in all of your, like your items and your SKUs and your everything that you order on a regular basis. And you can send it to the vendors and easily reorder. But there's so many like products that people need for their like general operations, supplies and equipment, which is what OS&E is for those people who maybe don't know the abbreviation I used, but there's no like centralized place.
What about just for even food and beverage? Are there
just for food? Yeah.
Is there a consolidation ordering platform for that? I mean, is it still people like calling on the phone and saying, can I get 10 pounds of tilapia tomorrow? Whatever it is.
There are a couple of companies that are trying to solve that. They want to be some sort of, you know, marketplace, like an Amazon for restaurants almost, where you have, it's like the marketplace where you have all of the products and then the restaurants sort of just have an account and it's all there and they can see everything in real time, what's available. There are some platforms that are specifically for farmers and, you know, sort of farm to restaurant things
right.
where you give farmers a platform so restaurants can find them because farmers don't have, I mean, farmers are, have less time and less IT than restaurants do.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if we sort of go down the spectrum of people who have tech and people who have time and tech, farmers come after restaurant
after
people.
Chefs right. and restaurateurs.
Right?
Yeah, I believe it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, when you were running a restaurant, we actually talked about this on the phone before we did the show, the Shoebox Company, which has made a business out of chefs being able to, or you know, anyone in a kitchen or restaurant being able to snap a photo of the note scribbled on the seafold towel that comes with your super boutique farm mushroom delivery.
Right.
And then that's sort of supposed to be your invoice.
Wow.
I mean, so you take a picture of that and then it goes to their data entry, which is in the Philippines. And then the next day, all of your invoices and everything are entered into your accounting system.
That is genius.
In real
that
time. So you have real time inventory.
That's
and
genius.
Sales.
Yeah.
And not sales, real-time
data,
food costs.
Tracking, yeah, food costs and P&L,
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we all know they live and die by the margins right now. Yeah.
Right, and it's not helpful if you get that information 3 or 4 months after the fact.
Yeah, I mean,
could you run your business?
No.
Could you run Tillit if you didn't have inventory and P&L
I literally look
in
at
real
P&L
time?
Literally every day. Like, I have, like, real-time accounting. All of our bank is integrated into the accounting service, and I, like, probably look at our P&L, like, 2 or 3 times a week. just to see. Like,
I think it makes it very hard for accuracy.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the causes and one of the reasons that there are such slim margins in restaurants, because there aren't, you know, efficient ways of properly tracking everything from ordering to inventory to invoicing, like you said.
Yeah, I remember Goods. We had like a receipt box, and it would get like reconciled like quarterly.
It was next to the cash box.
It was definitely next to the cash box and covered in grease. And like, you were lucky if the cook who received the like whatever
there
order
were a lot
actually
of
got it.
There were a lot of problems, and a lot of those, you know, were our own mistakes. But there were a lot that were, you know, just a there problem with the industry. It was the same.
Not available.
Us finding
tools were not
farmers.
Available.
You know, we had a hot dog that was like sourced from a farmer upstate, and like it was a monumental mess to find this gentleman, and then he couldn't keep up with our demand, and trying to find someone else was another mess. And so he had like
you couldn't even get him on the phone, right? It was like impossible to even order from him, because what you're saying is farmers have even less time than chefs and restaurateurs,
right? But he wanted to sell the product to us to get his product out there. There just wasn't a good way to connect the two of us. And
thus far, I haven't seen any platform that's been very successful.
Yeah.
I think it's probably hard to sign restaurants up.
As much as restaurants want to be innovative or have new technology or be more efficient and effective, that want and desire is balanced against deeply rooted habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And deeply rooted, albeit sometimes dysfunctional, traditional ways of doing things. And it's hard to kind of get the monolith
We put a towel loop on our apron, and we had chefs complain because they can only put their towel in the strap of the apron because that's where they put it for the last 20 years.
Like, we were like
there's
trying.
Some of those things that are just...
Sometimes we'll do like when we do product
habits,
development.
Definitely
I know someone who would
culture.
Tell you no towels on the apron.
But for some, it's like, they have to like tuck the towel into the towel strap or into the waistband strap of the apron. And like when we tried this new design and tested it on a bunch of people, it was like brain explosion. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So when you had Goods to now, did you have a social media assistant who was doing the social media? Did you have a digital social presence? What was your internet tech stack?
Goods was pre... Goods was
2012.
Goods was 2010.
2010.
So that was pre-Instagram. Goods was
pre-Instagram. That's pre-Instagram, but that's definitely Twitter and Facebook.
I think we tweeted. I remember people tweeting. I do remember Twitter. I don't know who did it.
Big A Ice Cream did Twitter. That's how they first started, where you knew how to follow the truck.
The trucks were big on Twitter.
They had a great
early
Twitter homepage that had sprinkles.
Luckily, our truck sat in one spot, so we didn't have to...
So you knew where to find us. But I remember tweeting specials. I tweeted for us.
there were probably three tweets on the Goods account.
On the Goods Instagram, or the Goods Twitter account.
We had a website.
Very
and
basic.
And I think that was probably...
And you were cash only, so you did not have any sort of payment platform.
POS, no.
We had no payment platform. We had no POS. It was very tech light.
Yes.
And now that I think about it, it's like... That seems crazy.
We probably would have seen some of the red flags earlier had we had a little more.
Yes.
You know, our red flags were in our numbers, and on the accounting side. And I feel like we definitely would have seen some of those things had we had a better platform, had we had a business plan.
Step one.
Step one.
Make
Step
business
one.
Plan. Step Don't one, episode one, make business plan. We talk about restaurant margins being already very small, and then technology being additional line items and add-ons that are expenses that continue to eat away at that margin. Do you think that that's an accurate portrayal, that technology is more things that people have to pay for when you think about delivery systems and kiosks and social media and Wi-Fi and all those things? Or has it shifted? Do you have less people because you have a French fry making robot? Do you have less people because you don't need anyone to answer the phone anymore? Has it shifted, do you think? Or is it just add-ons and the margins are getting smaller and smaller?
No, I think it's shifted. I think that, you know, as a business owner and starting your baby, that you have to be conscious of which of those pieces you actually need and which of those pieces are going to benefit your specific business. I think there's a lot that make it more efficient to both tell people what you're doing, to bring people in, to keep people interested, to all those things. I think you know, the Planoly's of the world can make it easier to get your story out to the way that people are receiving it. The Get Bentos are, you know, allowing you to have your digital storefront.
Who's running those things, though? And when do they have the time slot in their day to run the Bento Box and the Planoly?
I mean, I think, I don't know, I'm not in the restaurant, but I would have to assume it's a GM or an owner that are kind of managing those things. I think most restaurants probably have someone on staff, if not a contractor, who's doing social, or, you know, social and PR together. A lot of PR companies will do social for restaurants in a small way or in an abbreviated way. And then there's POS systems that I think are a big difference and more efficient. They can be subscription-based now, which, you know, 15 years ago you were buying into this like crazy, you know, upfront cost that was like $25,000 plus that, you know, hardwired in your restaurant.
And you 15 have to, years like, ago, that's a lot of money.
It's
that's
nuts.
A ton of money.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
a ton of money today.
Yeah,
forget
a
about
lot of money.
15 years ago.
Yeah, and then those things didn't have a lot of flexibility, so it's like hardwired in one spot. So like when you design your restaurant from the very beginning, and you have this like giant box
server.
Where the computer sits and where the server sits and where, you know, the server stations are, you can never change that because you're kind of stuck with it unless you have a technician that comes in and changes the whole thing for you. Now, I think with, you know, like a Square or a Toast, like those kind of things, you can do a lot of the updates on menus and of the items on there and the changing the prices, and there's a lot more reporting. You can loop in delivery services. You can loop in your website. There's a lot more options for that should make you more efficient and in turn, you know, hopefully make the margin a little bit bigger, I think.
So. Yeah. No, and I think also that is true. And I think some of the things have made it easier and cheaper. So like you asked, like who's updating the websites? I think a lot of times it is like the general manager or somebody like that. And things like Get Bento are much easier because in the past they had to go through a developer, which would be like $1,000 every time you had a menu change and stuff like that. So in a lot of ways, and then now it's just like a simple upload and change kind of situation. For sure.
Okay. So much to talk about. Do you have plans to do some tech episodes coming up?
We do.
Maybe not this season, maybe next season?
This season, we're just trying to get the basics down, but next season we want to keep deep diving into some good stuff. So if you have ideas or, you know.
I think we definitely want to explore some tech, and I think there's a lot of tech in, you know, in restaurant equipment that we haven't even.
We didn't even talk about the French fry making robot.
We have to
Flippy.
Talk about
out of time.
Flippy is the French fry
robot.
Making robot.
We haven't talked about Flippy,
next
which is
time
real.
On tech
next
bites.
Time.
Are you making aprons for Flippy?
I think Flippy's just an arm.
Flippy
I think the apron might go in the fry oil.
Flippy's going to put us out of business and the fry cooks. We're screwed.
No, the fry cook's going to be reallocated to customer care.
Correct, but we will not be.
Shit, I'm thinking we need a robot apron
quick,
stat.
Quick.
I'm thinking about when I think of the French fry robot, I think of the person who makes the fries at In-N-Out Burger. Have you been to an In-N-Out Burger, West Coast legendary burger place?
I haven't. Not recently. We've been, but I don't remember
so
the fry
they
guy.
They actually have a wall-mounted potato sectioner, and that's how they make the fries. They make the fries from actual potatoes.
It goes straight into the fryer?
It goes into a container. It goes into a bowl,
and
then it goes into the fryer. So they have a person who actually is pulling the potato through this metal. It looks like a.
Yeah, it's like a grid with a
grid with a blade, and then the fries come out, and then they fry them. So there's actually a person who pulls the potato, you know, pulls the lever, and then somebody who actually fries them.
Yeah.
So not only do they need Flippy, but they need I don't even know
I'm
what you
sure
need.
Lever
guy.
Can fry
lever.
Them. He can do the lever.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe. Possibly.
Who knows?
Yeah. As I think of that person not being there anymore.
Yeah. Sad day.
Well, sad day, and sad day now because we're out of time. It goes by so fast.
It does go by fast.
I've asked for more time, but it's always 45 minutes is the limit. And 45 minutes is the limit because there's a new show on the hour. That's how we roll at Heritage Radio. Shows start at the top of the hour, end at quarter of, and then you get something new. I want to thank Jenny Goodman and Alex McCreary for coming on the show today. If you want to find them on Heritage Radio, their show is opening soon. They are 2 p.m. Tuesdays, Eastern Standard Time. That's live. After that, you can find them on all the social media platforms. You can find them on social media at We Are Opening Soon. If you want to find them for chef wear, front of the house, back of the house, and maybe just a jumpsuit to wear out in life.
Viral, yep.
Just saying. You can find them at tillitnyc.com. That's T-I-L-I-T-N-Y-C.com. At tillitnyc. You can find Jenny at Jenny McGoody and Alex at ai.a.mode. Tech Bytes is broadcast live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, your host and producer. Matt Patterson is our engineer. Our theme song, Nomad a CPU Track, is by DJ Uptown Nico. You can find us on social media at TechBytesHRN and on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.